Today's podcast is brought to you by Unum. Any new parent will tell you that navigating parental leave benefits can be confusing and anxiety-inducing. In fact, employee benefits company Unum recently surveyed new parents and found that 43% never met with their employer to discuss their benefits prior to going on leave. An additional 35% said they didn't understand some of the key employee benefits being offered at their workplace. To help start the leave conversation with HR, check out Unum's Parental Leave Guide at unum.com/parents. That's unum.com/parents. The podcast is also brought to us by Aunt Fanny's. For years, we've been told that clean means sanitizing using antibacterials. But this kills everything, including the good with whatever bad. Now Aunt Fanny's brings probiotics to your home with microcosmic cleaners and hand soaps. They add good with an extract of beneficial bacteria plus non-toxic plant cleaners that work. Try probiotic cleaning at AuntFanny's.com/good and use coupon code MEG at checkout for 20% off your entire order. Again, AuntFanny's.com/good, coupon code MEG. For 30-plus years, I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid. Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 83, and I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing the life of a military couple and all the issues that need to be dealt with while in this stage of life. My guests today are Beau and Nicole White. Beau began his military career in the Air Force, rose to the ranks of parajumper, and currently serves in the Special Ops for the military. He's married to Nicole, who lives at home in northern Michigan and takes care of their two small children. Nicole also works with Rodan and Fields and is a very successful businesswoman. As always, I'll share my points to ponder for you to start using right away. And remember, parents, don't just download the episodes, click subscribe. And when you do that, you are joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribe list. You won't regret it. And I'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes and let us know what you think of the podcast. These are for you. If there's a specific topic you'd like to hear about, please let me know. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is available in the Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcast, subscribe today and don't miss a single episode. Friends, do you get sick and tired of hearing your kids argue, of them not listening to you? Or do you feel that sometimes life at home is kind of out of control? Well, I get it. As a mother of four grown kids and a grandmother of five, I can help you. Go to my website, megmeekermd.com, and check out my course, Discipline with Courage and Kindness, and let me help you bring more order to your home. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 83. I want you now to listen in on a conversation I had with Beau and Nicole White. Well, Nicole and Beau, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast today.
Thank you, Meg. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to be here.
Thank you. Okay, let's start with you, Beau. When and how did you decide to join the military?
Yeah, well, that was a tough decision given the fact that there's no real military, significant military history in our family. So at the time, you know, the war was kicking off, early 2000s. I was entering college, and it just was a big tug on my heart. I didn't feel like I was contributing enough by doing college at the time. And so I enlisted and was looking forward to the challenge and serving my country in any capacity that I could.
Awesome. Well, you know, you've got undergone some extreme training, and of course, our audience doesn't know you, but you started out in the Air Force and you became a parajumper, and the training was tough. What was that like?
Yeah. No, I like a good challenge. There's no doubt about that.
I guess you do. Yeah.
Prior to the military, I'd done some paramedic training and did like the medical aspect. So I wanted to focus on something that was rescue based or medical. So the pararescue career field made the most sense, although it has a very high attrition rate, and it does service the special operations community and supporting a lot of their assets, and then just theater, worldwide theater assets in combat search and rescue. So I had my sights set on that, and ultimately, you know, through a lot of prayer and searching, you know, settled on that and enlisted in it, and went through the selection process, which is about 2 years and varying degrees of difficulty throughout, but has about an 60 to 80% attrition rate, and by God's grace made it through. And so I was able to serve as a pararescueman for my first Air Force enlistment.
Can you, I know this is putting you on the spot, can you tell us one of the hardest training things that you did? And when you went through that, did you ever think of quitting?
I never directly thought of quitting. I thought of things that maybe I'd rather be doing, for sure. That's no doubt. But I'd say, kind of just as a collective thought in and throughout the difficult times, and to answer your question, the hardest probably being, you know, pararescue training specifically, and I've done some other selections as well with the Army, but pararescue in particular focuses on a lot of subsurface underwater training where you can't breathe. And when you can't breathe, you a lot goes through your mind. And so I'd say that's probably the hardest, or the hardest times was doing the underwater intervals or your 50 meter type, you know, giant stride entry, front flip, underwaters and things like that, you know, combat dive school preparatory type stuff. So definitely not my favorite thing, although I was a great swimmer, but it really pits you against yourself mentally. Mm-hmm. And you know, but I think as a whole, I never considered quitting per se, but it definitely made you reevaluate what you were doing. And I think, you know, I always knew it was going to end. And that was the one thing I looked forward to was, you know, your body's screaming for a breath and you're dying and you want to come up for air. But, you know, there's two things there. One, if you came up for air and went back down, you know, you're going to feel worse ultimately, because one, you failed, and two, your body you trick it and it make you feel worse. And two, you know, it's going to end. You know, you're not going to stay underwater forever. And so I think those are the two thoughts that always went through my mind is, you know, the consequences, one, and then two, the fact that, you know, it has an end. This can't go on forever. The worst feeling can't be forever.
And when you're talking about underwater swimming, you're talking about underwater swimming. You don't have a bathing suit on. I mean, you've got all of your gear and you've probably got a gun and you've probably got your boots on. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. In some cases you do. In some you're pretty slick, UDT shorts and t-shirt, but in some, yeah, you're wearing, you know, BDUs at the time, fins, weight belt, vest. Yeah. It's, you know, it can be a lot of drag. And each stroke, you're barely moving. And so sometimes you feel like you're moving backwards. And sometimes you are, because there's someone holding on to you to harass you a little bit, to cause that stress. And that's what those environments are doing. They're designed to induce stress, to see your reaction. And it's a selection. So they want to put you through as many controlled stressors as they can to know how you're going to respond in an unknown stressful environment.
Yeah, so I mean, it's designed to select people out and have do whatever they can to get you to drop out. Correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the name of the game, really, in all selection special operations, and is to try to mimic the stress they think you're going to see on the battlefield and bring that to a controlled environment and run you through the various you know, phases of stress and events that you may see. And evaluate you based on those situations.
Nicole, when you met Bo, he was in training, and you guys got married very fast, within months of meeting each other. Did you have any idea when you signed up for military life what you were signing up for?
That's a good question. I thought I did. I thought I knew what I was getting myself into, you know, from an outsider perspective, looking at this man that I wanted desperately to marry and had every plan to marry. I could see a certain level of commitment that was required, a certain level of sacrifice that was going to be required, and felt like I could handle that. But when you live it out day to day, when the reality really hits you, it is a whole different ballgame. So, you know, looking back, I kind of have to chuckle on what I thought it would be like. In reality, it's a whole lot worse and a whole lot better all at the same time. So it's been a very challenging lifestyle, a very challenging career field, makes for definitely some challenges in marriage. But you know what? Good things don't come easy. And I think we've had some incredible, incredible highs, in part because they're hard fought. They're hard fought for.
Boy, that's putting it mildly. As I've watched you guys, I've really had a full disclosure. Bo and Nicole are my nephew and niece, and I've had a front row seat to this. And I will tell you, you're both very, very humble people, because the way you live your lives is extraordinary. And it's extreme. I mean, it's been very hard. Let's talk about deployment. You know, Bo, you've been deployed many times to many countries, and you've seen a lot of things over there that you can't necessarily talk about when you get home. So that makes you feel kind of isolated. But have deployments gotten easier for you from an emotional standpoint? I mean, at first, you left Nicole behind, but then you left young children behind. Does it get easier to leave over the years, or does it get harder?
Yeah, that's another good question. Yes and no. I think, you know, and you put kids in any situation and it adds a completely different dynamic. And then on top of that, you know, we all go through different seasons, you know, seasons individually, seasons together, married, and then our kids go through different seasons. And so, you know, where Nicole and I, it may be easier for us in some cases to constantly have that reentry. Now you have that, you know, element of the kids and then their growing seasons and their emotional states. And so it's always changing. So there's never an easy time in that aspect. But I would say you do learn to recognize and quickly adapt, you know, if you're smart. And that's not always the case. I mean, we're not perfect. We still, sometimes that's through trial and error. More often than not, it's through trial and error. But I think the element there, that the ticket there is good communication. And that's one thing we are good at. And I think, you know, we'll stress throughout this that good communication, the key to everything, and open communication. But, to answer your question, you know, emotionally for me, I think as a man, I think it is easier to kind of come and go more than her, you know, in these trips and as we travel the world, and you know, I get exposed to different cultures and environments that I, whether I can or can't talk about them based on location, you know, it still has an effect on me in ways that whether I can or can't talk about it at home, I can't really portray well enough, you know, to bring those feelings home and for them to understand how I feel. So that's not always easy, mm-hmm. you know, but as far as just the coming and going and reentry for me individually, I'd say it is easier for me, you know, because I quickly leave that behind and now I'm home. Whereas she's been mm-hmm. home and is juggling, you know, constant life with the kids and the house and maintaining the house and maintaining order. And I just jump right back in. And so I think mm-hmm. you know, that's a massive stressor on her, one of which, you know, I try to empathize with, but more often than not, you know, never fully understand. And so to answer your question, yes, it's easier for me, but it is something that we have learned to, you know, adapt to, but it has taken and still takes a lot of work and a lot of communication.
Yeah. I mean, really, each of you has two different lives. You have your life together and you have your lives apart. And Nicole, you had said to me once that as you're preparing for Bo to leave and the kids are getting ready for him to leave, there's sort of some angst and some agitation. And talk about the days or maybe the weeks prior to him leaving, what that's like for you and what that's like for the kids, and how do you handle that for yourself and your kids?
Yeah, I think this goes back to even what Bo was saying in terms of how we tackle and how he has succeeded at some very, very high level, military challenges. And a lot of it is mind over matter. So as we prepare as a family and me as a mother for an upcoming deployment, there is an angst, there is a tension, there is an emotional preparation that I am constantly battling to kind of suppress. And this has been a lesson that I've learned, honestly, the hard way more often than not. But because what happens is as I'm preparing for what's about to happen in a week or 2 weeks or a couple days, I'm missing out on the joys of the present and I ruin it. I ruin it. And that, unfortunately, I really struggle to fight against. And, you know, I think the kids pick up a lot in terms of our emotional status, if you will. So I can really tell if I am starting to get stressed out, I'm starting to think too much about what's coming instead of just enjoying being in the present, enjoying Bo being home that day. He isn't gone. He is there. Mm-hmm. We are all together as a family. But if I'm thinking about the future, I'm ruining the present. And the kids start really feeding off of that. So mm-hmm. that's been a hard lesson and something that, you know, like I said, is mind over matter and we're constantly trying to improve on. But, you know, there is some mental preparation. There is, you know, re-entry as well requires a lot of transition. And I think for me in particular, you know, kind of a shifting of roles, shifting of priorities. And so it's something that, you know, requires a lot of grace and a lot of trial and error. And we just do the best we can.
Well, you know, I think that those struggles are common to a lot of husbands and wives, but I think yours are much more exaggerated because, you know, your situation's extreme. He's going to another part of the world. Do you worry ever that when he leaves, that's the last time you're going to see him?
I live with that reality, yes, every moment of every day that he is deployed. And some years he is gone 9 months of the year. Some years he's gone 6 months of the year. And it's a lot of time apart. It's a lot of time where he is potentially in extremely dangerous situations. And again, that is something that, you know, I think I've learned a little bit more the hard way, but you cannot live in a state of fear. You can't live like that. It's not healthy. It's not conducive to growth or joy or any of the things that we want to fill our life. So a lot of that has to do with our faith journey too. And my understanding and recognition that, you know what, we're here on earth temporarily and heaven is our true home. And God gave me an incredible gift in my husband. And I have had to over and over, because sometimes it's a daily struggle, give that gift right back. Be like, God, he's in your hands. And please, please don't take him from me. But I know that he is serving where he needs to. I know that he is doing a job that few in the entire world could do. And I give him to his service of his country and to the service of you. And like I said, it sounds all well and good right now because we haven't been asked to pay that ultimate sacrifice, but we've been surrounded by people who have. And it's a humbling reminder. But, you know, the men and women in Bo's career field and in service in general, in the military in general, that's what it means. That's what it means to serve. And it's not something that can be taken lightly. And it's something that, you know, is, that's one of the benefits of living in a military community too, because you really hold yourself up and support those around you as well. So that, you know, definitely comes into play. But to go back to your original question, it is hard, but it is a reality that I absolutely do live with every day, but it is not a fear that I live in. And I, you know, I thank God for every single day that I've had Bo and pray for a long, long, long life with him, but we're no fool to what could happen. So,
You know, it's, I think that those of us on the outside who are not in the military really have no clue what you guys go through. And I know there was a time when you were surrounded by a military community, but now you live out in the country. You're more isolated. You don't have people like that around you. You both have been thrown an extra hardship, and that is you have a wonderful, wonderful young boy, Forrest, who was diagnosed a year and a half with leukemia. You were out visiting your family in the middle of nowhere in Montana, and Beau was halfway across the world. Nicole, what was that like for you when you first found out in an emergency room or an ambulance all by yourself with Beau far away that you were sitting with a child who might die?
Yeah, I can't even look back at that day, that week, 18 months ago, and not get choked up. And I've told this story innumerable times now, and it still gets me every single time that we were within hours of my son literally being suffocated to death with a mass wrapped around his airway. And I was by myself. And Beau, you know, was not only halfway across the world, but he ended up being en route during a time when he didn't know if his son would be alive or dead when he landed. So to say that that's scary, to say that that's heart-wrenching, to say that that's agonizing, like none of those words do it justice. Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, I think mothers all over the world can recognize when your child is in danger, you step up. You step up, and your own emotions and your own fears, they take a back seat, and you immediately mobilize, and you know, you are Mama Bear and nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. And in that very first 24-hour period of time, I don't remember fear so much. I remember my priority being lending whatever comfort and support and safety that I could to my child. And it wasn't about me at all. It was about Forrest. And I think, you know, mamas that have undergone any sort of emergency situation can probably relate. You know, you take a backseat. Your own emotions take a backseat.
You know, and it's when you're in situations like that that you really see what people are made of. And I will tell you, I remember talking to you on your ambulance ride. You probably don't remember. You were in an ambulance for a number of hours getting to Seattle. And you sounded so calm and so in control and so focused. And I'm sure Forrest wasn't nearly as afraid as you were, because he was like, "Mom, I just can't breathe very well. Will you make this go away?" But you really rose to it extraordinarily. Parents, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Beau and Nicole White. We need to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Beau and Nicole. Friends, it's no surprise Rothy's has over 1,000 nearly perfect reviews. They're stylish, sustainable, comfortable, washable, really the perfect flats for life on the go. I love Rothy's. They are comfortable, they're beautiful, they come in the coolest colors and different styles, and I'm not even going to tell you how many I own. They really are everything they claim to be. Since Rothy's are seamlessly crafted from recycled water bottles, they're ultra comfortable as soon as you slip them on. That's right, there's zero break-in period in these shoes. I can testify to that. Plus, they're constantly launching new styles, so you're guaranteed to find a pair or three you love. Better yet, Rothy's are manufactured in a zero-waste factory, and they ship directly in the shoebox. No unnecessary packaging. Rothy's always come with free shipping and free returns or exchanges. No risk, no worries, no reason not to try. You'll quickly discover why BuzzFeed call them their forever shoes. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/Meg. Go to rothys.com/Meg to get your new favorite flats. Comfort, style, and sustainability. These are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to Rothys.com/Meg today. With today's distractions and busy schedules, it's easy to lose sight of what's really important to us. The things we love and appreciate, real moments with family. From cooking with your kids to sipping a refreshing drink at home with them after a long day, Dairy Milk helps us savor the real moments that matter with the ones we love, while also giving our kids nutrients they need to grow strong and help them recharge. I will tell you, friends, when my own kids were growing up, I made sure that they had a glass of real milk every night at dinner. I also tried to encourage them to drink milk at school and in the morning. And now that I'm a grandmother of five, I tell my kids to make sure that my grandkids get 3 servings of real milk every day. Milk is a good source of high-quality protein for your muscles, calcium and vitamin D to strengthen bones, and B vitamins for energy. Milk has 9 essential nutrients kids need with a taste kids love. Learn more at milklife.com. That's milklife.com. Bo, how did you find out that Forrest was sick? And what were those 24 hours like for you when you were trying to get home to your wife and Forrest?
Yeah, Nicole reached out to me, got a hold of me. Absolute miracle that it was so seamless and so smooth. That line of communication was very quick. And once I was aware of the situation, you know, let those folks that need to know, and they started the process to get me home as fast as possible, which was very, very quick. And but as such, I was on a flight direct from the Middle East that I had no communication whatsoever. So last I heard, got in the aircraft in the Middle East, you know, she was getting on an ambulance ride for 4 hours. And in a snowstorm with a compromised airway and a pediatric, you know, patient, which from my, you know, little medical experience, pediatrics compensate really, really well, and then they crash hard. Mm-hmm. Without the ability, in this case, for them to secure an airway whatsoever because of where the mass was located, they could not intubate or maintain an airway. So needless to say, I was, you know, scared to death, but having emotions and feelings and a breakdown like I've never felt, like I've never dreamed was possible, you know, in a grown man, just the absolute hopelessness that you feel that you cannot affect a situation. And that's one thing mm-hmm. that like I pride myself on, one, as a man and as a husband, you know, and as a father, but definitely as a type A type person who works in and amongst the communities that I do, you're a problem solver and you're a fixer. Well, I can't fix this. I couldn't fix it. There's nothing mm-hmm. I could do, literally nothing. And so it's just accept, virtually break down and pray as hard as I can. And it's a feeling and experience I never want to relive, but one at the same time
right. That
I'm, you know, eternally grateful for and what it has brought about in us and in myself personally.
Because when you got there, I mean, even within those first few months, you didn't know. I mean, Forrest got through the initial, critical stage of, you know, his airway collapsing because his tumor was so big. He got past that, but still you had a very long way to go. And you guys lived out in Washington for a couple of months, right? Or was it while he was in the hospital? I don't remember how long that was.
Yeah. We were out there for 5 weeks during his initial induction phase. Again, this was all new to me. I mean, you know, I imagine a lot of things happening, most of which revolved around me because of the nature of, you know, my travels. But never in a million years would you imagine your 4-year-old boy would get leukemia and fight for his life, you know, with a compromised airway. So once we got the airway managed under the first, you know, week or so, we were able to rent a house in Washington and get his first month of induction knocked out there in the hospital. and then move treatment back to Michigan where we live. And so, yeah, that was a very tenuous time, you know, just medically, just everything. I mean, the shock of it all, then everything slowing down, and then being not at home, being displaced, you know, and then it just was I would say emotions, feelings, tensions were very, very raw. And, yeah, it was another large mountain to climb that first, mm-hmm. you know, that first phase.
So you've had a lot of stress on your marriage because of your work, Bo, not only just because you're gone, but because of the type of work you do. And then Nicole, you both had the added stress of, you know, Forrest having leukemia. And then you, Nicole, after Bo went back, lived 2.5 hours away from the children's hospital. So you were driving back and forth often with Forrest and with your two-year-old while Bo is gone. So the pressures, not just the emotional, but the physical pressures that the both of you were going through. Talk to me about how the phases that your marriage went through, and because a lot of people they'd be done. I mean, their marriage would be over. So how did you guys get through this together? Or were you always together? I mean, were there times you're like, okay, I'm a million miles away from you, Nicole or Bo, but now you're strong. So what were the handful of things that really helped you guys get through this as a couple?
You know, they say the hardest thing on a marriage is a sick child because, well, of the stress of the sick child and because it induces other things such as financial issues and various other problems. Mm-hmm. So we can absolutely vouch for that. That is positively true. We can't imagine anything that would be harder on our marriage. It kind of made our deployments look simple, you know, compared to what we were going mm-hmm. through and are still going through at this time. But to answer your question, I think, you know, backing up, I think we've always been pretty good at communicating, and we credit a lot of our success to that. And then also recognizing, you know, problems. I think, you know, during my time when I was active duty, I was becoming a person and going to a place where I recognized I didn't want to be. And so we removed ourselves directly from that situation and kind of put ourselves on a new one. And it didn't address all the issues until Forrest, you know, got sick. And then mm-hmm. that was the moment we sat down in Washington in the house we rented behind the hospital. And we had a lot of long, tenuous conversation about our future and what that looked like. Mm-hmm. Because this situation naturally brought about a lot of baggage. The situation naturally exposed a mm-hmm. lot of baggage that we had over the years, and we now had to deal with it. And so it wasn't just for a sickness. It was now bringing to light all the other things in life that we had not dealt with. Mm-hmm. And so we had a long mm-hmm. conversation about us and how we were going to do this mm-hmm. and if we wanted to do it. And it was the moment, there was just that crossroads of, do we want to do this together? Are we going to do this together? And how are we going to do this together? And it was an actual question we asked each other is, do we want to be together? Do we really want to go through this together? And I mean, it ruins a lot of marriages. And we've seen that because it's so difficult.
Did either one of you sort of feel, I'm not sure if I want to stay with you and go through this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yes, we both had hesitations and, you know, I, when we asked that question to each other, there was not an immediate answer from either of us. It was a, let's think about it. Let's pray about it. Let's think about it. You know, it's easy to give a quick answer because you know the right one.
Right. But I mean, you were, cause you're absolutely right. When you go through a trauma that is that big, it brings out everything in you because it's sort of like your whole person is exposed and laid bare on a table. And you really have to ask yourself and one another, okay, this is who I am. this is a different day. Life is really fragile here. And so you're asking that yourselves and your spouse the deepest, hardest questions I think a married couple can ask one another. So obviously you stayed together, and that was a year and a half ago. So how did you plow through that? How did you get to the point where you thought, okay, let's put all of our personal crap behind and let's pull together and be a couple? How did that happen?
Sure. I'll go first, and I'll let Nicole chime in, I guess. I feel like I'm doing too much talking. But after we answered that question of do we want to do this and do we want to do it together, there was no question, we had to do it. Do we want to be together? Do we want to walk this road together? And when we determined, yes, we do, we determined the only way to do it was to get regrounded in our faith. And it wasn't that we were that far off the narrow path. It's just that sometimes you're not, you know, deeply rooted on it. And that's kind of where we had found ourselves. And so we knew the only way, the absolute only way that we were going to succeed is to 100% lay it out, lay it bare, you know, give it all up. And that was it. You know, there was no other way around it. We could not hold on to any part of ourselves and be successful at this, whether for Forrest, for our marriage, for any of it. And so that's ultimately what we had to do. And so it was accomplishing that. That's obviously the hard part, and is it still a hard part, and it's daily. But we did that through counseling. We did counseling at our local church. We've kind of redefined goals in our life, redefined our days, what we need to do together, and kind of refocus ourselves and come up with absolutes. Things we have to do together no matter what.
You know, I think that you're absolutely right. When you go through a gut-wrenching trauma like you guys went through, you know, it's part of all the good and all the ugly, and each of us sort of comes forth and is laid bare on a table. And you and Nicole were looking at that going, oh, okay, where do we go from here and how do we do this? Obviously, you and Nicole got it together because you're still married. Tell us how you did that, because there's so many couples listening that go, that's exactly where I am. I'm not sure I can go forward. What were the two or three things that you and Nicole did that really brought you back when you felt so separated?
When we determined we were going to stick together, both of us want to remain together to do this. We had to sit down and map out what that meant. We had to make changes. You know, what we were doing before wasn't good enough. Okay, we were decent at communication. Okay, this, whatever. We weren't doing enough. And we had to focus. Yes, Forrest required a lot of care and focus, but we needed to fix ourselves just as much. And we needed attention just as much. Our marriage did. So we did counseling, and we mapped out ways we needed to fix ourselves and continue to lay it all down. And that's ultimately what it meant, was laying bare, laying flat, laying it all out, giving it all up, and individually, together, and seeking God in every way possible, because the only way through this was through Him and through His grace, and by giving ourselves up. We couldn't maintain any ounce of ourselves and survive. And so we knew that. And so it was just mapping out how we're going to do that. And so it was counseling. It was daily devotions. It was, you know, non-negotiable things. It's things that take work and sacrifice and a lot of effort. And we're not perfect at it. We still aren't. You know, it's having time and making time for those conversations, those, how are you doing? No, how are you really doing? Those conversations, you know, where are you struggling? How have you been tempted? Things like that. Getting into asking the questions and not being scared of the answers, and having grace in those answers that you know you're probably going to hear, you know, in what things that you don't want to. And so it was just that exposure and that rawness and that laying it all down with each other and laying it at God's feet that was so critical, and mapping out ways to do that.
You know what I find extraordinary, Bo, as you're talking, is that you're trained. Hundreds of thousands of dollars have been put into you, Bo, to train you shut down and to compartmentalize. And now here you are in a situation with your wife where you have to do exactly the opposite, where you can't compartmentalize. She has to know and hear and see every minute detail of your character and your feelings. And now on to my points to ponder. First, seek out support. You know, every married couple, especially those with children, need a good friend or two to help them keep their marriage healthy. When spouses face long separations, live different lifestyles while apart from one another, they must have support. Challenges that military families face are unique in their intensity. Some face the reality that when a loved one is deployed, he or she may not return home. Or they face the fact that a loved one may live with post-traumatic stress disorder, a physical disability, or an injury due to service. Military couples must actively seek support from friends and family, and they must ask for it. Most friends and family are willing to help, but don't know what the couple needs. And that's why couples, especially military couples, must be confident enough to speak up and ask for help with their specific needs. Two, prepare for transitions. You know, one of the biggest challenges military couples deal with is living two separate lives and then merging those lives together over and over. One will be home keeping life going a certain way with the family, and the other will be functioning independently, maybe abroad or in a different part of the country while in the military service. Each will be in charge of their individual lives while separated. And then when they rejoin one another at home, sparks can fly. Who does what? Who makes which decisions? If the couple anticipates this and communicates openly and honestly about it ahead of time, the transitions can be much smoother. So they need to talk about how to transition, how they can do it more smoothly, who does what, and the difficulties they're facing. Three, work hard on communication. Because of the unique challenges of separation, it's critical that couples communicate about their feelings, their wants, and their needs on a regular basis. This is tough for any couple, but particularly important for couples in the military. You can use Skype, email, letters, or phone calls, and do so frequently. Discuss important matters as well as possible while you're separated, but particularly while you're home. If time doesn't permit while you're separated, then you must as a couple make a point of getting together, sitting down, and plowing through serious issues when you're together. Now let's get social. All right, parents, I want to hear from you and interact with you. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at MegMeekerMD. Or if you have a question, send it to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. My first question comes from Suzanne. Dear Dr. Meg, I have a 7, 4, and 20-month-old child. My parents divorced 15 years ago. My dad left my mother for another woman. My relationship with him has been on and off since the divorce. I haven't seen him in 5 years, and it's a very toxic situation. I don't want my kids involved. Recently, my 7-year-old daughter has been asking about him. She'll say, "Do you have a dad? Where does he live?" I'll tell her he lives very far away. She'll ask why we don't visit him. Can we see him? I'm not sure how to answer her questions. Well, here's the thing, Suzanne. First of all, there's no reason to involve your kids in what your father did. I would not give them the details until they're a whole lot older, when they're adults, because that's not fair to them and it's not fair to him. First of all, you need to reconcile your relationship with your dad. I know it's very painful. I know you're very angry at him for leaving your mother. If your father is otherwise a good man, it is important for him to be involved with your kid's life. I believe that kids need grandparents. And look, the truth of the matter is every parent has messed up with their kids. You will probably mess up with your kids. I hope not this severely, but we all make mistakes. But we've got to push through those, get some resolution, and allow our kids to have the best of that person. And it's okay to let them have the best of that person and understand that the person has made some serious grievances. Here's what I do. In a case of abuse, however, physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, different story altogether. If the person or the grandparent could potentially be harmful for the children, that's a good reason to keep them away. I'm assuming your father is not a threat to your children. So here's what I encourage you to do. You need to reach out to your father and have some kind of reconciliation. This doesn't mean that you ever need to approve of what he did to your mom. You can tell him you're working on forgiving him, that you're very upset what he did, but that you would like to restore whatever relationship you can have with him. I think it's important for kids to be around their grandparents, and your father and even his new wife could be a very positive influence on your kids. I would also keep your mother involved if that's possible too. So don't worry about how to navigate your kids so far. First, reconcile with your dad and have a decent relationship if you can. Second, when your kids ask questions like, where does he live? Simply tell him, I think you're doing great. Tell him he lives very far away. And when she asks, why don't you visit him? Just say, you know, it's really hard to get to go see Papa that far away. And can we see him? You say, yes, we're working on that. Don't criticize him. Answer very simple questions. Don't tell them that you're mad because of the divorce. Keep it very simple. Reconcile with him and then move forward from there. Suzanne, I hope that helps. Parents, I love answering your questions, so keep sending them in to me. You can email me any question to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. I want to thank my guests, Bo and Nicole White. Now let's recap my points to ponder. 1, seek out support. 2, prepare for transitions. And 3, work extra hard on communication. So parents, until next time, remember, great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. Thanks for listening to episode number 83, The Life of a Military Couple, Part 1. And because of your dedication to raising great kids, Dr. Meg's Parenting Revolution has grown to over 3 million downloads. Head on over to Facebook and Twitter and follow @MegMeekerMD and check out what's new at MegMeeker.com. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter to stay updated and get information about giveaways. Don't forget to share the podcast with other parents, subscribe so you won't miss anything, and leave us a review so we know how we're doing.